Welcome to Breaking the Underdog Curse with Dr. Don McDonald. This show is for vitalistic chiropractors that want to take their practice to a new level. Whether that is higher volume, less stress, more congruency, or just want to continually learn and evolve. Every Wednesday, I will be bringing you an interview that will provide you with either mindset or strategies that will help you overcome your underdog curse. Whether you're plateaued, afraid to fail, or stressed out due to overwhelm, this podcast will show you how others have overcome their challenges. Make sure to go to www.drdonmcdonald.com where you can sign up to get notifications when new shows are released and see previous ones you may have missed. I hope you enjoy the show and don't forget to crush the curse. Are you a people pleaser? I know I sure am. And when you mix that with being a chiropractor, it can create a lot of trauma. I know firsthand, it can wear away at your health, your relationships, and your practice. I term this the underdog curse, and I've spent the last 15 years coming up with a solution. My book, The Underdog Curse, was written to help others live a more authentic life. This is very challenging if you're externally influenced. When you take an externally influenced person and have them try to spread the message of chiropractic, it can be very challenging. If you'd like to get back to who you really are, regain your health, strengthen your relationships, and increase your worthiness, please visit Amazon.com and pick up your copy of The Underdog Curse today. Remember, if we take the time to nurture ourselves, we are much stronger at serving others. For chiropractic to thrive, we must have thriving chiropractors. Hi, and welcome everybody to another episode of Breaking the Underdog Curse. This is Dr. Don McDonald, your host. And today I have an extremely special guest that I'm super excited to interview. Jonas Sachs is in the house today. He's an entrepreneur, author, a journalist, and a social change strategist. He created the YouTube sensation Metrix and the Story of Stuff, and author of the book Winning the Story Wars, which is where I found out where he was. And he just told me he's excited to announce he just passed in his new book to the publisher on, it's called Unsafe Thinking. Is that correct, Jonah?
Yeah, that's right.
That's awesome. So, Jonah, welcome to the call.
Oh, thanks so much. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, I'm super excited. So, as I was talking a little bit before the call, this podcast is for chiropractors and particularly vitalistic chiropractors. And when we talk about vitalistic chiropractors, we talk about, you know, the power inside the body heals the body. And if we can remove interference to the nervous system, the body can express its genius. And after reading a lot of your stuff, that sounds like some of the stuff you've been doing around the world, is that we already are perfect and we have all of our parts. We just need to kind of unleash them to the world.
That's kind of what you've been doing. I like that idea. You know, in the book, I talk a lot about empowerment marketing, this idea that, you know, we don't need to go out and tell people how weak and pathetic they are and how they need this great product, but really how the power that they need to unleash is inside of them and make them feel like they're the heroes of their own story. And sounds like, you know, there's some crossover. And I should say right off that my father is a retired chiropractor. So I've been
maybe
influenced a little bit by you know, hearing him speak all these years.
So. That's phenomenal. Well, there you go. We have that nice common bond. So yeah, we talked about in chiropractic, some people call it scare care, right? Where they're trying to like threaten people. If they don't look after their spine, it's going to degenerate and they're going to die. Mm-hmm. And you know, that might be true, but we also want to get to the other aspect where we kind of call it the vitality shift, where we want to kind of not tell people what's wrong with them, but kind of express what's right with them. And just, we haven't kind of unleashed their potential to the planet. So I think this would be great. So the first thing is can you tell me just a little bit about the history of marketing? Because I like how I've watched some of your YouTube videos and how you talked about, you know, in the old days, it was like one-to-one and then it went to broadcast back to one-to-one. So I wonder if you can kind of just explain that little story for us.
Yeah, sure. So, you know, a couple hundred years ago, human beings invented these amazing machines that allowed, you know, one individual to reach hundreds, thousands, millions of people, right? Started with the printing press, moved on to, you know, billboards, radio stations, television stations, and that marketing, you know, grew up in a time of that one-to-many communication style. And so everything we think about by advertising and marketing comes down to, I've got a microphone and you're going to listen to me. And, you know, even if you're born even in the 1990s, you're still immersed in that kind of in that kind of world. And then the world quickly changed out from under us to where it's really not about being able to one person broadcast to many, although, you know, there's still television ads, but people no longer really listen or pay attention to that sort of broadcast in your face, here's what you should think mentality. What they really listen to, and study after study shows this, you know, what are their friends alerting them to on Twitter? What are they getting in their email? What are they hearing word of mouth? It's now this many to many, many marketing landscape. And if we're still sort of talking in that broadcast mentality where we're the experts, we've got the authority, you're the consumer who's sitting back and being either threatened, cajoled, lied to, you're going to lose that connection really quickly. So how do you craft messages that make people say, oh, that's my message too. I'm going to pass it on for you. I'm going to share that. I'm going to comment on that. You know, in the old days, if someone would take our advertisement and change it, you know, we'd sue them. Now we hope that they do that. We hope they make it their own. And, you know, the last thing I'll say about this is that's how the human brain actually evolved to communicate. These oral tradition societies, it's always been that way. We sit around the campfire, we tell a story. If it's interesting, people pass it on. If it's not, it gets forgotten. And so that's how our brains work. And now we're sort of returning to that time. I call it the digitoral era because it's digitally empowered oral tradition society. So how do we make messages that are so compelling that someone says, I'm going to make that my own and pass it around? And that's the new challenge for marketers these days.
Which is kind of cool, though, because chiropractors in the past, we've always kind of felt like underdogs because we don't have the big drug companies advertising for us. We kind of talk about in chiropractic, sometimes we have negative brand equity because, and we'll talk about this in a second, because some of the myths about chiropractic, in that case, that's the negative myth, not the good myth that we're trying to create. But the negative myth is that we're scary or whatever, all that cajoling. So I think this is pretty empowering for me too, especially as a chiropractor, as more of an amiable personality. So if we're not like a super high driver, we feel kind of intimidated by that marketing. So what you're trying kind of saying is, you know, getting more authentic and spreading your authentic message is actually the new marketing now.
Yeah. I think that's the case. And then, you know, we talked for a moment about that fear-based marketing, and that's the other sort of history piece that's worth looking at, is that in the old days of marketing, there was one strategy, and I call it inadequacy marketing. It's to tell you that you're not smart enough, you're not good-looking enough, you don't smell good enough, you don't drive the right car, and you're not going to be accepted or safe or okay if you don't get the right product. And so in this kind of marketing, the brand or the marketer becomes the hero and the audience becomes a damsel in distress. And you're telling someone, you know, one of the earliest examples is Listerine, where suddenly they're telling everyone you have bad breath and you're not going to get married and you don't even know it. Now, when you're sitting there reading Ladies Home Journal and you find out like, oh my God, I might have bad breath, you don't know what to do with that. You actually respond because you're scared. But now in this new world, you're not going to post on Facebook to all your friends, hey, you have bad breath, get this product. That's going to kill you, right? So, you know, the world has really changed where we can't tell people that they're not good enough without us. We need to, you know, the shift is how do we tell them how great they can be through relationship with us? And so that's a slight shift, but really it's like, how do you make the audience the heroes of their own lives as opposed to trying to be the heroes for them?
That's cool. Yeah. And one of the things I really liked in the book too was the five deadly sins of marketing. And I was wondering if you could just kind of review them with people, because it's kind of, you can see how that used to happen all the time and how now we want to avoid those. So maybe you could just touch those.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I looked at sort of five things that kind of just come reflexively to us when we go out to set out to market, and how that just so sort of does not really work anymore. So, you know, one of them is vanity, this idea just sort of like unabashedly standing up and saying, we're the greatest, we're the best, look at us, we've been in the business this long, we've got this many patients, we've got this many accolades and awards, and people are just like,
who cares?
You. I do not care. That becomes important later on. You know, someone steps in your office, they want to see that you've got good reviews or you've got the right degrees, but that's not what's bringing them in. They're not going to be like, wow, I'm lit up by that in the way that we sort of think they will. Mm-hmm. There's authority. You know, experts have really come into, have lost their sort of shine that they might have once had. And just because you say you're a doctor or you say you're a scientist, that doesn't mean what it used to anymore. No. People want to believe in people that they feel connected to, and almost more important, as we see, you know, in American politics for sure, that they don't care so much about the facts, they care about who's saying it, right? So, which kind of goes to the next point, which is what I call puffery, which is, you know, speaking in the voice of God, you know, booming at people like, you know, there's never been a better time to buy a Cadillac. Come in now. And, you know, like, well, who's talking? I don't have a relationship with you. You're telling me what to do. So how do I create like a real bond by using my own voice, my own vulnerability, my own authenticity? You can't just sort of tell people from above. Another one is gimmickry, you know, this idea that like, well, if we just make it funny, or if we just, you know, use some like little tricks here and there, people will kind of ignore the bigger picture that might not be so pretty for us. So, you know, again, how do you have that authentic, true message? You know, you can wrap that in humor or other sort of gimmicky kind of fun stuff. But yeah, so really rethinking in some ways just the basics of what we do and how we do it, so that we're not just taking broadcast style marketing, throwing it on the internet, throwing it into this new world, throwing it into word of mouth marketing and hope that it changes everything.
Yeah, totally. I think that those are awesome. And I love those. I just read them to my wife. My wife speaks quite a bit through chiropractic as well. And so she's like, oh, I'm going to write a Facebook post on those. So she was loving those because we see that a lot. We want to get that to that authentic style. So one of the big things you talk about in the book is about myths.
Yeah.
And I was wondering if you could kind of explain what a myth is.
Sure. So, you know, today myths sort of are a synonym for a lie, unfortunately. You know, we sort of say, oh, it's a myth about chiropractic, it's a myth about, you know, climate change, all that stuff. But myth actually has a more exalted position in human societies that we kind of forget. And those are these kind of core meaning stories. Human beings form tribes and identities around stories, actually, over, you know, throughout history. If you believe in the same stories, you know, you're likely to share the same values. Stories are ways that we explain how the world works and what we should value. And every society across all time has been driven by myths. So myths combine four things: an explanation of how the world works, meanings, like this is my place in the world as a result. Story, it takes place in some magical realm, not just sort of in the everyday business of life. And then ritual, how do you live that story out? And, you know, people began to worry in the mid-20th century that with science and with atomic weapons and all the stuff that myths no longer made sense. They didn't work anymore. We didn't have myths anymore. And we were going to become the first society, Carl Jung said, we'd become the first society not to have myths. But what I found in my research is really that we do still have myths, but they tend to be marketing myths. You know, people, Madison Avenue started telling these stories that gave people an explanation of how to live, that gave them an identity through the brands that they used, that used these kind of magical fun stories. We know these people are actors, but we still care. And they give us rituals, ways in like the marketplace to make choices that form our identity. That's very odd that we sort of form our identity around the brands that we evangelize and use. But in some ways, that's how our myths are being made today by expert marketers who use storytelling. A lot of them are using it, I think, in a way that degrades society. But if we as marketers use it in a way that props people up and makes them feel like, yes, this is an explanation about life and it's a positive explanation about life, positive explanation about who I am, you know, we can do a great service to the people who listen to our messages and believe that more is possible.
That is awesome. And it's funny because in chiropractic, we have, and you'll be well aware of this with your father being a chiropractor, is that we have this kind of fight between philosophy, which is meaning, and science, which are evidence-based. And I was wondering if you could just get your take, like there's the fight that we have to be one or the other. And when I'm reading through your stuff, I find that you see there needs to be a bit of balance between the science and the meaning. So I'm interested in your point on that, your thoughts.
Well, you know, I do talk a little bit about in the book how science sort of doesn't give us everything that we need from a myth, from a functional myth, because it dispassionately explains a bunch of stuff, but doesn't really explain to us what that means in our lives and how to live that out. And so I do think that any fact is presented in the context of, okay, the so what? So what does that mean to me? How can I use that? And so, science can only take us so far. It's important to be evidence-based, of course. If it doesn't, evidence-based things that don't comport with our philosophy of how life could or should work are easy to ignore or to deny. Things that say, oh, this is true and right at the same time, that's where we get really excited and feel great, you know.
Because you had a story in the book, and I can't remember her name, but she was talking about the environment, and she was out using kind of science to show how the environment was bad. And then you helped her create the story of stuff. which kind of put some meaning into it to get more impact. And I was wondering if you could explain kind of your thought process with putting that together.
Yeah, so the story of Stuff was this 22-minute explainer video on the internet that came out in 2007, so quite a while ago. That got about 40 million viewers and really was successful as a viral video about garbage, essentially. And this woman, Annie Leonard, came to us and she said, you know, I've got this way of talking about where our stuff comes from and where it goes when we throw it away that I think is really compelling, but how do we, you know, make sure people want to see it? And we helped her really craft that message into being about individual lives, you know, what not sort of what are the hundreds of thousands of tons of garbage out there that are, you know, millions of tons of garbage that are being produced every day, which is just so abstract. But like, what does it look like when you go into Radio Shack and buy that radio, and what's happening between you and the clerk, and what's happening with the one worker in China who's, you know, and getting that human scale story together where people can say like, oh, I've totally had that experience. That's hilarious. That's neat. And you're keeping them both laughing and engaged and wanting to know what's going to happen next. All of these things are story tools that make people want to take their medicine, you know, in a way that's positive. And so people are going to learn even as they feel entertained. And so we learned a lot from that, some of the other viral videos that we did, which is like, how do you tap into some of these real human storytelling techniques while you're giving facts and information? Because facts can be disbelieved, but stories don't tend to be disbelieved. They either resonate with us or they don't.
And I like how you said that too in the past, like when the storytellers would tell a story, it would either resonate and they'd share it or else it would die.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
And the nice thing about marketing today and reaching out today is like you can test a lot of different things. You can, you know, you said your wife was going to do a Facebook post, you know, how long does that take? How much does it cost you? You know, see what people say, check out what other people are doing that seems to be getting picked up. And, you know, in some ways just doing it and getting out there and putting out ideas is the biggest hurdle. And you can learn very quickly. In the old days, you know, they used to take a year to make a TV ad. They put it out and they actually didn't know if it worked or not. They just would get an award or they wouldn't.
Right.
We have so much more feedback now if we're willing to take it, you know, from the marketplace.
That's so awesome. Yeah. So, and again, like I told you before, I'm going to be the chiropractic profession and consult you a bit to see what you do. Yeah. And he's like, oh no. but what, from the one scale, we have an individual chiropractor who has an individual office. How would you suggest them or give them some pointers on how they can create a story? And of course they can buy your book to get like all the, like to get right in deep, but how would you suggest a sole chiropractor would work on their story?
Yeah. So, you know, first I guess you'd want to think about not just selling the idea of chiropractic, right? That's the chiropractic is the larger brand, but like, how do you sell yourself? What is your particular way that you are interacting with patients? What kind of relationships are you creating with patients that help them live their best possible lives? And, you know, because they probably have heard about and evaluated chiropractic as a thing, but that's not what they're buying. They're buying you and that relationship with you. And so what is that unique thing that you offer them? I use this idea of brand gift. You know, if you're Obi-Wan Kenobi, you know, what lightsaber are you giving to your hero, Luke Skywalker? And something that they can really get, you know, that they can really understand. That's not technical. And that's not just, oh, I'm going to get my oil changed, which is a sort of generic service, but I'm going to create a human relationship. One idea I use in the book is brand archetyping. If my brand was a person, what kind of person would they be? Would they be like a rebel or a pioneer or a healer, which is good for chiropractors, obviously. But asking yourself, you know, how do I transfer my unique personality into this story that I want to tell? I would start also by, you know, talking to those patients who are already sharing you around, who are talking about you to their friends. What are they saying? What are those points that they feel are so easy to notice in you and to repeat to other people? Because in many ways, we're not out to tell our own stories. We have to tell our stories collaboratively with our audiences. We need them as evangelists. So seeing where they're starting and where's that connection point between what they're already saying about us and who we think our best selves are, you know, is another piece. And you do need to tell your own story through the stories through the stories of the people that you've helped. And so, you know, how do you start capturing those stories and getting, you know, that what I call this sort of like mentor hero relationship, you know, how are you empowering these individuals? Make it really tangible, tell really straightforward stories of success that you've had, not just in making people feel better, but in the, again, like living that best life possible. Those are some of the places I would start.
Yeah, no, that's super helpful because, again, a lot of times we take those for granted because we have different types of stories. And again, if you were to, how many stories would you accumulate? If you're just, say, you'd recommend just for a sole chiropractor, if they'd have like 5 or 6, because they'd almost be different characters like you're talking about, or avatars or something like that, that you could use.
So you mean like how many stories, like how many pieces of content do you need is the question?
Yeah. Or just to get in your mind, and then how would you use those, when you're trying to get your message out there?
Yeah. I mean, so I often think about this sort of, when working with clients, you know, think about this customer journey, you know, so like, how do you actually map out from someone first hearing about you to, somebody becoming an evangelist for you? What's that life cycle like? And how does everything along the way, every experience along the way and every touch point along the way get in the perfect alignment? I ask people to think of your business itself as a story, not so much what story do I want to tell, but how is this whole experience a story? And then I would just say, okay, you know, yeah, the first touch, the awareness piece is what we often think about. How do I come up with a great Twitter post that people are going to want to pass along,
right,
or something like that? But really we need to be thinking about, what's that master story we want to tell? What's that feeling we want people to have? What's that thing we want them to know about us? And then how do we start deploying stuff on social media that tells that story? But then how do we, you know, think about what our office looks like to keep that story going? What do you give someone when they first walk in? What's that piece of paper or that small gift or that thing? How do we greet them? And I think that if you actually can make this very clearly, you know, joyful, fun, interesting experience that feels very connected, branded in a way, like an Apple store is branded, you know, then it becomes buzzworthy in itself. So how many pieces of content do you need? I would say map out the life cycle of your customer and have at least one delightful, interesting part of your story manifest at each one of those steps.
That's really cool. No, I think that could be hugely helpful. And I think if we're more conscious about that, that'll help a lot of people because we don't think of it that way. And a lot of times we think of marketing, like you said, of just, hey, what's the one post or what's the one screening or what's the one talk that I could do to bring in new practice members? And I think that's pretty cool, is to be able to actually map out what that experience would be like.
I mean, like if you think about what the, you know, intake questionnaire looks like and the way that the voice that it's in, you know, does it have to be a standard, you know, voice, you know, faceless type of thing, or could it extend, you know, the same ideas and ethic that the brand is trying to get out there, that the practice is trying to explain? You know, how do you take feedback from your patients, and can it be done in a way that is playful, joyful, but extends the story? You know, when you reach out to them once a year on their birthday or whatever it is you do, can you keep that story and that conversation going? You know, but that takes a sort of self-knowledge about, you know, what do we stand for? Who are we? And, you know, the very basic place to start with that is I always say, you know, core values. You know, what are those core values of this business? And then how do we express those values in the world? Because that's how stories work. They are ways that we transmit our values to other people.
That's awesome. That's cool. And I think that's going to help a lot of chiropractors out there. I think it's just a lot of reflection, though, getting together with your team, getting together, like you said, with your top patients, top referrers, and then kind of create that story. So that's awesome. Now, tougher question. Yeah. We go to the profession at large. So if you're consulting to a profession that had the wide range that chiropractic has, from people who only like to deal with people in pain to people that want to help other people express their life to the maximum. And then I'll just give you kind of a framework for how it works in Alberta. I'm in Alberta, Canada. And so what they've done is they basically interviewed a bunch of people and did a bunch of questions and brought a bunch of people together and asked them, what would you be willing to hear for chiropractic? And everyone says back pain. So what they've done is they've created ads that say, if it hurts, see a chiropractor, which goes right, because people are only willing to hear that. And when I was reading your book, I think you had some examples of that where people were trying to match their product to whatever people wanted, and then that kind of can create problems down the road. I was just wondering if you could give a couple different ideas on how you could approach marketing a profession rather than me, or maybe what the pitfalls of doing that is.
Yeah, the pitfalls of being too focused on one and asking your customers what they want to hear.
Yeah.
So essentially, if you ask your customers what they want to hear, they're going to reflect, you know, what they already know and probably don't necessarily need to hear, right?
So, right.
What they know about chiropractic, this is what they're willing to, you know, and in some ways it's kind of a defensive position to take. Like, well, what are, how far can you trust us? And like, maybe you shouldn't trust us any further. What's really important is, you know, this type of branding that you're talking about and messaging is really has to be based on the strategic business plan that the brand or the profession wants to take. And if you guys want to be focused just on back pain, then I guess it makes sense. But I think that I know a lot of chiropractors are really trying to go well beyond that. And so it, regardless of what the audience says they want to hear, if it doesn't fit your strategic goals as a business, that's just a non-starter as a strategy, right? So you need to ask, what is it we're trying to accomplish as a bit, you know, what are we trying to accomplish as a business? What are our audiences or our customers trying to accomplish in their lives? And where do those two things cross over? And where they do is where the business opportunity is and where we can start telling those stories. I would say that, you know, we put I see a lot of businesses take a very defensive stance where they're thinking about the naysayers. Well, if we say that we're about this, so there's going to be people out there who are like very mainstream medical. They won't believe it. Or someone had a bad experience with a chiropractor. They're going to say no. Well, I think that your naysayers and your furthest from your center targets, they're always out there and they're never going to believe you. And if you're spending all your time trying to appease them and convert them, you're wasting that opportunity to find those people who are just beyond your reach right now, who maybe are totally open to your message, just haven't heard it yet, who could be delighted with a new, fresh look of your brand or your profession. And so I think we waste so much time. So I work a lot on climate change issues. And, you know, so much time is wasted on like, well, people don't believe in climate change. Well, that's actually a very small, much smaller number than the people who believe but aren't doing anything about it right now.
Right.
I would just say, you know, start thinking about really what your best possible self is and your best possible offering is. Stop thinking about the naysayers and think about how do you, you know, go out to that next level of audience. And that often starts with arming the people who do already love you with the right tools to tell their next circle of friends. and I think, you know, people do notice when, and I'm trying to think of a good example of, how, you know, a brand sort of gets beyond, like, you know, let's take a brand like Samsung, for instance, which, you know, once was like a really knockoff cheap electronics brand. And then they started wanting to play in the premium market for, you know, lifestyle. Right.
Yeah.
And no one said that you can't do that. That's not going to succeed. You're a Korean knockoff product, but you know, they decided to step into that space and people almost instantly forgot. In fact, probably people can't remember anymore that Samsung used to be like the worst product on the shelf. Now you'd much rather have a Samsung product than a Sony product because they did the work and they had confidence in themselves. So I know there's not specific content, but I would just say, you know, don't limit yourself just because you think some people out there might not accept a broader proposition for your story.
Totally. And if you were to create you talked about there's certain elements to a story, and can you kind of just go over those? Like when you're creating a story, what would be kind of the key elements for those?
Are you talking about the kind of key elements for a brand strategy or the key element, like those five, like the mentor character, the brand gift, the values?
Yeah.
World.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Cause there are like other things that you need to tell an actual story, but for creating a kind of strategy, as I said before, think of your company or your industry as a story itself. And how do you, if you're going to make every single communication a part of that story, how do you do it right? Well, you start with those values. All stories, you know, are based on values. What are those values that we stand for and we think our audiences actually care about? Any brand that you dig deeply into that's doing well is really able to both talk about and live out those core values. Mm-hmm. Based on those values, what's that core truth? A good story is going to teach you about the world. So what is that core truth that we stand for that makes the moral of our story, if you will? So, you know, I wrote about Nike, for instance, and how like at a time where brands were all saying, you know, get the right shoes and you'll be a great athlete. Nike was like, no, everything that you need is already inside of you. We're just here to help you on your way. And then they spent 20 years with that moral of the story. Everything they did was like achievement's hard work. You've got to dig deep. It's in you, and people responded. And so they knew what that moral was. And, you know, I run into the book, through the book, many, many morals that resonate with people. So find out what you believe that core truth is and make sure that everything that you're doing is hitting that core truth. So it's values and then moral. And then I think about you know, again, switching that relationship. So who are the heroes of the stories that you want to tell? And make those heroes your customers. Understand your customers. Understand what they want and where their values cross yours. And tell stories about them rather than about you. So mapping out who our customers are as our heroes and thinking of ourselves as mentors. So we are the fairy godmother, the Obi-Wan, the Gandalf character who's
saying, Yoda. Yoda.
What, so much more is possible in your life. And who? What kind of character are we? People don't want to have relationships with nameless, faceless mentors telling them what to do. They want to have a very personal relationship. So what is that voice and character we're going to use to speak? And again, I use this kind of archetyping method that many people do. And then finally, you know, if we are that mentor, what is that magic gift that we're giving people? So what is the magic gift of chiropractic? It's not like a back adjust, not a spinal adjustment. That's not the gift. But figuring out what that is, what makes it different than other healing experiences? And what is it that when I say this is going to change your life, it makes sense why it's going to change my life? Five things: values, moral of the story, understanding your heroes, understanding your character as a mentor, and the brand gift that you give. You have a strategy. Now, everything that you do is based on getting those ideas out there. But those five simple things can help any team of marketers make sure that they're staying on track. So that's kind of the methodology.
That's awesome.
So just to give you
your book,
tell me your new book.
Yeah. So the new book's called Unsafe Thinking. And it's about, you know, the world is changing so fast. So whatever we're doing right now, even if it's working, it's not good for too much longer. But most of us are at a place, including myself, you know, where you realize that you're not as nimble as you want to be. You're not changing as fast as you'd like to. You've hit some kind of plateau, right? And when we get there, we have a big problem because our brains are really programmed to notice patterns and then to like exploit that pattern forever. And we get really nervous about trying to get out of that rut that we've built for ourselves, that niche we built for ourselves. All kinds of evolutionary reasons why we don't want to change. But if the world's changing quickly, we have to start to change quickly too. And how do we get comfortable with change? So instead of saying, well, it's not working anymore, I'm going to change my people who work for me, or I'm going to change some methodology I'm using, it's like, how do I change myself? And so this is about that uncomfortable process of thinking in ways that don't come naturally to you, of acting in ways that don't come naturally to you. So it's called Unsafe Thinking, How to Be Nimble and Bold When You Need It Most. And I interviewed by 50 to 60 of like the most innovative people that I could find doing amazing things in business and science, inventors. How do they sort of think in new ways? How do they push the envelope and get out of their comfort zone? And then just the science of what really works for getting people out of their ruts. So I'm excited.
That's awesome. When is it released?
In April. But you can pre-order it on Amazon now if you like.
Yeah, so help him out. Help out Jonah. Get order the book. Order the Winning the Story Wars. He has some amazing content. So I always end up with the whoever I'm interviewing just to give him a couple minutes of kind of your moral to the story. So if you have chiropractors from all over the world out there listening to you, what kind of words of parting wisdom would you like to give?
Let's see. You can cut this part out. Yeah. Parting wisdom is, I think that, yeah, so we live in a time where people are overwhelmed by information and by claims and facts, and what they're looking for more than anything else is meaning and connection. And I do think that, you know, chiropractic offers this valuable opportunity for people to discover something that is not just healthy for their bodies, but really meaningful for them and something that they can make as part of their identity. Someone who believes and is an evangelist for chiropractic, that becomes part of who they are and something that they can offer to their friends and to others. And that's really, you know, a wonderful thing. Getting too much into the technicals and the facts and the figures and the naysayers and all of that, it just loses people. But if you can find ways to connect with people and to help them form their identity around their health. And, you know, in observing my father, I have seen that his holistic approach to health has been validated over time, has really grown into the mainstream in ways that it wasn't before. And even though maybe, you know, still chiropractic's not in the mainstream, this idea that like the whole body needs to be healthy for any part of it to be healthy, totally has become common the way that he's been talking about food, the way he's been talking about exercise, the way he's been talking about spinal health, all of these things. And so really showing chiropractic potentially as a kind of pioneering industry that's been ahead of the curve all this time. So long heritage, but really this sort of like we're a couple steps ahead. And there's a lot of people, I think, who are tired of just the mainstream and who don't believe in the mainstream. So, you know, helping them see beyond that as a pioneering industry, I think there's a huge amount of opportunity. And then again, not relying just on chiropractic, but relying on yourself and your own personality and your own special flavor of it to being the reason that people come and come back. I think that will bring success.
That's awesome. And just a side note, because I'm just personally interested, what was it like growing up as a child of a chiropractor?
Definitely got a lot of health advice at all times. You know, I think that my dad was pretty, you know, he kept it kind of light in terms of the adjustments on us. We didn't get too many adjustments just when we really needed it. But in terms of, he was always exploring sort of what was new, what was being discussed, what the medical establishment may have been missing that was really evidence-based. And so, you know, I don't know if this came from being a chiropractor, but, you know, he was doing the gluten-free thing, you know, 30 years ago. And he was really talking about sort of whole body exercise when people, you know, sort of said there was no connection, you know, before the diabetes thing was exploding. He's like, this is coming. I think he was able to see ahead and showed me a little bit how to see ahead what was coming. And so I always admired that. And, you know, I think he had a chip on his shoulder too about, you know, maybe it's this underdog thing, you know, always feeling like he wasn't getting the credit maybe that he deserved for seeing into the future and always being made a little bit like not as good, being seen as not as good as a medical doctor. So I think he definitely didn't appreciate that. And it was always hard for him in a way.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, Jonah, thanks so much for being on the podcast. That was a huge amount of content, very, very informative. So thanks so much for being on.
Thanks for having me on, Don. I appreciate it.
And everybody out there, like, there's so much content. You have to actually get his books because there's so much information. I got his audio book because I like to listen in the car. And then I also got his regular book. So I like to take notes so that I like to scan it with the audio book and then go back and dig into the individual parts to get the regular book and get his new book when it comes out. So everybody take that information, apply it in your life, and go crush the curse.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you receive value from this episode, please take some time to rate and review us on iTunes or your favorite place to listen to podcasts. If you know a fellow chiropractor that could benefit from this message, please share it with them. Because it's my goal to provide you with great content, please contact me if you have any questions at drdonmcdonald.com or find me on Facebook. I look forward to hearing from you. So until next time, Dr. Don out.